Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
You are listening to episode 78.
A very special episode.
A spep episode. A spep.
As we like to say.
We'd like to talk about great episodes as greps. And I really want that
for
to
better
be,
or worse, that's really caught on.
And that should be part of canon, 10,000 Hours law. But now we introduce to you, for the first time ever, a spep. Or actually maybe a FEP, a family episode.
That's also true.
One of a kind.
We are lucky enough to have been in the childhood town of Grant here, and we were even luckier enough to sit down and have a conversation with Scott Spanier, his father.
A bit of a dad cast, if you will.
The original dad cast.
And we were talking about something close to home. Work ethic.
And kind of what creates work ethic, what fuels work ethic, and how work ethic can be a double-edged sword in some ways.
Carol, don't cut yourself.
Really cool and insightful episode for me as an outsider, and I have to imagine the same was true for Grant.
Oh, certainly. It was, it was dope. It was cool. It was emotional. It was
a little of everything.
How we like it. Special thanks to something that is a bit of everything to me. Good old Sanebox. Sanebox is what I use to manage most of my email. And it actually, I'm pretty sure there is a specific folder called Sane Everything that it actually creates. Typically what I use is Sane Later, which it just filters out everything that doesn't need to be dealt with right away. Keeps your inbox quite actionable. And I would recommend you check it out. Given the right person, I would just like pay for them to try it for even 2 months. I'm not going to make that offer like fully, but like Vince, if you want to try it for 2 months, I'll pay for your subscription. If you are interested in checking out Sanebox, which I think you should be, especially if you do any amount of emailing, go to sanebox.com/AD. That's /10,000 hours.
10.
0000.
H-O-U-R-S. Stop after it says 10,000. But yes, a great solution to a problem we all have. Thank you so much, Sanebox, for your sponsorship and for your product. Thank you, Scott Spanier, for not only being a gracious host, but a great guest.
For the spep.
Absolutely. And thank you, listeners. Hopefully you enjoyed as much as we did. Episode 78, Work Ethic.
But we always tell our guests, just like don't swear. I mean, first off.
Nah, come on, man. Hey, Grant.
Nice. Oh, nice. You're taking back control.
Yeah.
No, I think it's fair for me to just sort of sit in this moment for a moment.
I think if there's any one episode where it's actually excusable for you to bask a bit, I think we've
a little bit of basking. Well, I am curious what you're working on, but perhaps to give more context. Well, okay, Vince, just tell me what you're working on. I know you're like shaking over there. You really want to get it out. Must be awesome.
It is. It's great, actually. I was in the radio booth all week recording stuff for the Animal Humane Society's end of year donation.
I believe you said your favorite medium.
It is, yeah. I love radio.
I do listen.
It's kind of its own.
I do listen when you talk to
us. Thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate it. That's really what friendship is occasionally listening.
No, co-hosts. We're co-hosts.
Oh, my God. So that kept me busy at work and also recorded 2 episodes of these parts this week, which I won't go too in-depth into.
Thank you.
It was really fun. It's been a really...
It's your other podcast?
It is.
Yeah.
It's been a really recordy week and... Well, we've got a great end to
what
it.
Is it? What is it? These parts dot...
Simplecast.fm.
Okay. I just want to make sure you get your plug in. You know,
like, very conscious not to actually...
If you are going to plug it, plug it.
I wasn't going to plug it.
All right, ask me.
Grant, what have you been putting your time into?
Well, I was recently putting my time into a little drive up to St. Cloud with you. You were there. We went on a bit of a 10K road trip. Not a full 10K road trip, as we've done in the past.
Not to Oregon or whatever, but...
Yeah. We're up in St. Cloud at the moment, casting from my parents' basement on the first 10K family edition.
Absolutely. I couldn't be more excited to be back.
Yeah, popping back for a little family dinner and a little podcast with someone I think we'll introduce shortly. Besides that, I don't know, man. I'm just making a bunch of stuff.
LA tomorrow, right?
LA tomorrow, yeah.
Let's date the show.
Then Orlando. Then I'm back.
Globetrotter. Pretty exciting episode, though.
It is an exciting episode. So, what's the proper introduction? How does one introduce one's father?
That's a pretty good job.
Just posing the question. Yes, today we have my father, Mr. Scott Spanier, on the episode. Pops, as I've been known to call him. Long time in the car business. I'm sure we'll get into this, but certainly a role model in many ways for me in my business life and in my my creative life and in my personal life. One could say across the board. Scott. I don't call you Scott. Hey, Dad. Welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. This is bound to be a fun one. When Grant proposed the idea to me a couple weeks ago, I mean,
even earlier, I think.
Yeah, even a couple months ago?
Yeah, I think it was a while ago. I was like, ah.
I was immediately on board.
Yeah.
It sounded cool. It sounded interesting. And I was excited. I still am.
You still are? Okay, good. Nice.
Yep, still
it would have been pretty unfortunate if you were like, ah, I really lost steam as we came in the door.
Well, I feel like I should let you do the honors.
Sure, certainly. Pops, what have you been putting your time into recently?
A lot of stuff. Our dealership just opened a new
store. Just came from. I guess good context is on our way back home, we stopped in the new dealership. It was beautiful. You moved from move locations. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, exactly. We have a Subaru dealership right here in St. Cloud. One of the top three Subaru dealerships in the state in terms of volume and customer satisfaction and all that good stuff. We've recently, within the last 2 weeks, actually moved into a brand new facility, eco-friendly, kind of following in Subaru's path, so to speak. So that's occupied a great amount of my time in the last 6 months to the last year. And I'm actually just kind of coming down from it right now.
Nice.
It's it's kind of a little bit of a euphoria after getting in there and still working on some kinks and things like that. But it's been a pretty crazy couple of weeks, and things are finally starting to settle down and get back to normal day-to-day business.
Yeah, that's weird. I just moved as well, and it's like
all of us.
Vince,
time of transition.
It's in some ways the fall.
Yeah, the leaves changing and our lives changing. That's great, and really the store looks amazing. It's huge. And very. It's clean and cool and looks modern. And for some context, how long have you been doing what you do?
I've been in the car business, I believe, in August, it was 28 years.
Nice. A wee bit older than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, longer in the business than I've been alive. Yeah.
Then you've been a father, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was your first child, some would say. No. Okay, so I'm curious, though. I feel like we would be, you know, we would maybe jump into a little background. We would jump into the topic, but... I mean, maybe we introduce the topic, then we pop back.
Let's do it.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, so I think some good context is, and I don't want to butter your bread too much here, because you're my father, and I don't like to let on to that, and also we're sitting right here. But you've been a tremendously hard worker, and I think something, you know, I worked in a couple of dealerships, which, graciously, I feel like there was some nepotism involved in my employment in those situations. I won't deny it. Actually, there's a great Guy Kawasaki quote that says, nepotism doesn't matter. I'm paraphrasing. Nepotism doesn't matter. It's what you do with the opportunity. To be fair, I didn't do a whole lot with the opportunities. I feel like I underperformed. That being said, something I have heard over the years, over and over, is just sort of the reputation you've cultivated or earned. And I feel like time and time again, it kind of comes back to effort and work ethic, which is our topic today. And it's something I think, especially over the last couple years, few years maybe, that has like I've gained respect for. Or, you know, as my perspective changes, I realize more things. And so it's sort of fueled me in different ways. And I have a great respect for it. So that being said, that is the topic. I think maybe a nice way into this is you talking a little bit about kind of where you come from and where that comes from, where the work ethic comes from.
Yeah, I guess as far as a work ethic is concerned, I'm not sure if ethic is even the right word, but I grew up on a small dairy farm in central Minnesota, just south of here. I was an oops child.
Yeah.
I have four siblings, two older brothers, two older sisters, and my closest sister is 9 years older than myself, and they're all kind of grouped together and went through life growing up together like a normal family, and I came along later. So by the time I hit my teen years, they were through school, gone, going to college. My oldest brother was already married. I was the ring bearer in his wedding. I was 5 years old when he got married. So it was almost like a generation gap.
Yeah. He's 17 years older, right?
He's 17 years older than me, yes. And so it was almost a separation of two separate families, and I think my mother and father had to raise me differently than they raised the four of them. And I think the work ethic stems way back because, as I said, when I was a young teenager, they were already gone. My father was in his 40s when I was born. So when I was a teenager, he had been farming for 40 years, had kind of a beat up body. And when it came to working and getting things done around our farm, I didn't have really a choice. It wasn't something where I could decide that, yes, I want to do this and really do the best I can at it, or no, I'll just do enough to get by, because just getting by wouldn't have got by. It was there was a lot of pressure on a, you know, at the time 14-year-old kid who wanted to go do other things, obviously like most young teenagers do, but didn't really have that choice. And at that time was pretty much forced into working and getting the job done because it just had to get done. And I pretty much ran our family's farm on my own while going to high school for the next 3 years until I was 17. And we finally decided enough was enough. I didn't want to farm for the rest of my life. My parents decided have an auction, sell the farm, and move into town, which they did. But I think those work values, I think is more appropriate even than work ethic. I think those work values were instilled in me. I don't know that they can be taught or someone can become like that. I think it's something inside of me that's made me that way, which has turned out, you know, over the years to be a good quality and bad quality at the same time. But that's kind of where it's all come from. That was the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like creeping a little bit further along the timeline. And then your father passed when you were how old?
I was 17, okay. Starting my senior year of high school.
Was that the same year you sold the farm? Was that prior? Or
It was a year after we had left the farm.
So you had sold the farm, okay.
Yeah.
How did, I mean, I'm just kind of curious about, like, I feel like I've heard you talk about it before. You correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like he instilled some of that in you. I mean, obviously the situation and the necessity, but maybe you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. He was a man of very few words. he wasn't a guy that gave you a hug and a pat on the back for doing a good job. He was the guy that would definitely let you know when you didn't do a good job, and held pretty high standards with everything in life. Things all had their place. If something got used, it got returned to that spot where it came from. Just core values about life. Again, very few words, but it was more in the way he lived his life. And I know he struggled because of the age difference. A lot of my friends had grandparents that were his age.
Yeah.
So there was a definite disconnect there. But given that, he still tried to get to my level on certain things and still got the message across of how to be a good person and how to hopefully live your life and leave your mark.
Mm-hmm. It's super interesting. I definitely can't imagine that, that in general.
You mentioned that, I forget exactly how you said it, but that the work ethic or work values, this hardworking attitude was ingrained in you early on, for better or worse. Do you want to expound on that a little bit? What do you think are the pros, and if there are any cons, of having a really dedicated work philosophy?
Well, I think the pros is you have to have the self-satisfaction of a job well done. And to me, there's almost nothing more important to me than to look back and admire my work. There's people that can build things. There's people, that manufacture things and create things, and artists and photographers and things like what you do to create things, non-material things. Even in my situation, it's been clawing and scratching my way through the car business for 28 years to rise to the top without having the inheritance, the family business to take over. I knew I was never going to have any of that, and so I had to create everything on my own. And it was kind of that's my way of looking back, and I can look at the events more so than an actual finished product, because in my business, the product is never finished. It's more of the day-to-day accomplishment. And that's turned out very well for me. It's been very advantageous, and I've had some associates that I've been able to work with over the years that have helped me attain a lot of things. On the downside of it, my spouse, my children, I think have suffered a little bit because of that. I've devoted so much time to my work and climbing that mountain that I think I've missed things in my life that I probably can't retrieve.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. I mean, there's certainly like an impermanence to it. I think something I've grown to respect over the years is like the anxiety inducing numbers game, which it is. It's like, eventually I realized like, oh yeah, the last week of the month is like a pretty busy time. Like Pops is pretty busy right now.
Yeah.
But I also think like, yeah, that's, it's interesting. And it's like, it is commendable, or I mean, whatever you want to call it. I feel like to a certain degree, like the work you do is not seeking necessarily commends.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not in pursuit of any sort of
gratification in that way. Yeah, yeah. Right. But at the same time, it is in pursuit of gratification, like quantifiable gratification,
certainly.
Which in a lot of ways is a little bit harder, or is like much colder than any sort of artistic pursuit, which, you know, I feel like it should be mentioned, like, too, though, you have pursued other things outside of work as well. Like, I think you're a very accomplished musician in your own right. And also, like, you fix a lot of shit. There's impermanence to selling as whatever we want to call it, or managing a car business or whatever. But there are, like, so many things you've, like, built over the years. I think you definitely have, like, the manic creative energy that I understand, that I do understand.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I just think you've got where you had the opportunity to kind of grow with the more creative side.
Oh, totally.
Of what I have. I have all those things inside of me, mm-hmm. but have never either taken the risk or been able to pursue them as much as
I mean, totally. I don't want to get too sappy, but I feel like I gave you guys that thing for Christmas last year, whatever. I don't remember the exact words of it, but ultimately, like, the paraphrasing, it's like, I have the opportunity that you did not have. So I feel like no gift I can give you besides, like, living my life very, very fully is like, you know, that's the only thing I can do, because I can't give you back that. But I do feel like that is my... I mean, I don't... That sounds like fucked to be like, oh yeah, my life is a gift to you. But I don't know. I feel like I have very much tried to take advantage of the opportunity and, like, continue to, and I will, you know, I will see that through and hopefully beyond. But
so okay, I don't mean to potentially speculate or overstep.
Sure, sure, sure.
But something that I've learned about you explicitly and implicitly being friends and knowing you over the last 5 years is you have just this voracious appetite for not missing out on opportunity, for not letting things pass by, and for not wasting. You're just the least wasteful person that I know, and especially when it comes to opportunities. I think there is some intrinsic link between work ethic and the desire to make sure that there's no kind of squandered creative opportunity.
I was gonna say, I feel like it all just stems from guilt, probably. Somewhere down the line, it's like we're all just fucking guilty and, like, just trying to, like, run away from that. yeah. But no, yeah. I mean,
in a way, is work ethic, it can be guilt-driven, right? It's a desire not to fail to the best of your abilities, right? You don't want to underachieve.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, okay, it's very much in a drive reduction theory way of, like, I need to just reduce this drive, or I need to satisfy this thing, or just, like, hedonistic way. I do think I share in the pleasure of a job well done in a different way. Certainly, it has to be. Like, I come from a different generation. There's so much other stuff, but I think I do share in that. And I think that is, like, there is, like, a masochism to it to a certain degree. Like, you sort of revel in the pain of the job, especially, like, the midway point of it. I mean, I don't know exactly, but I feel like to me, that's what it is. Like, it is, like, you almost kind of want to feel that a little bit because it makes it sweeter on the other side. And we may have different products, but, like, I feel like the grind of it is sort of, like, romantic in a way.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the car business is to me. I look at it the same way. And you guys have to understand that you have surrounded yourself and people have surrounded you that have like minds and like work ethics, mm-hmm. and work values. And I have to commend people like you that at your age do work hard and are pursuing things and opportunities, because I deal with every day many people in your demographic that have this entitlement, and the work value, the work ethic is not there. And it's a struggle to have employees that just don't have that desire and drive. And let's face it, the car business is part of that, because a lot of young people get into the car business and view it as a stepping stone. And admittedly, 28 years ago, I did too.
I was going to ask. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Interesting.
And so now in my mentoring, in my coaching, in my day-to-day managing of people, that what I've think I've developed and hope I've developed and instilled in some of these people is the young people coming up in the car business. It's still tough. It's a rough road to travel. It pays high dividends, high rewards. Mm-hmm. If you're good at it and you get better at it as you proceed. But once they've discovered and figured out that this isn't a stepping stone, this is a career, they have that epiphany and things become so much easier for them, and they can concentrate on their future rather than the present. But it's tough finding people that young people, I should say, that can recognize that and want to spend the time and the effort to get there.
The problem, I mean, not the problem, but a factor is that the same reason that we are able to pursue all of these things, anything, do, you know what I mean? Like, there really is so, so much opportunity. And to me, I see that as like, oh my God, so lucky.
Right.
So lucky. Wow. If I had been here 30 years prior, 20 years prior, whatever, it's like so different. And of course, it will continue to evolve. But I feel like the problem is people see that and they see the, like, you know, because the highest levels, quote unquote, are so attainable now or perceivably attainable, it creates this, like, this lust within the, you know, everyone. And it's almost like a lust that's like, oh, well, we all deserve that, you know? And I mean, that's so, there's so much more to that in terms of like misperception
context.
And misperception too of what high levels of achievement really are. But I think perhaps, and I feel like the way I've tried to view things and I continue to try to view things is, it is a stepping stone, but that doesn't mean I won't approach it with the dedication of a career person. And I feel like that really is the game. We've talked so many fucking times about like treading water and like just moving forward. But really it is. I feel like when people get into a situation, let's say somebody's like struggling, they want to be a car salesman as like sort of a means to an end. And if you look at it as a straight means to an end, then you act as if. And I feel like if instead you actually started swimming toward the goal, the next step in that process. And I mean, of course, there's like a lot to be said about like how far you actually get along the process or don't. But either way, I feel like if you actually commit to the thing and stay engaged in it, like you will move forward regardless.
I'm interested to kind of maybe dive into where we all think that work ethic is kind of a nebulous term. Maybe it's not the exact right term, but where it comes from. I remember you mentioning earlier on that you don't necessarily think that it's something that can be taught in a sort of broad way, but I'm kind of curious where, I mean, obviously some of it's inspired by your father and by your father. I'm pointing here, but you can't hear the pointing on the radio, but I guess, is it all born of necessity, or is there some like more esoteric means for inspiring work ethic in either of you?
I don't know. I mean, well, that is interesting. I certainly don't want to, like, I do work really hard. Like, not, I don't mean that in like a, in any other way than like, it is like, I do that. Like,
yes. Yeah.
So I feel like that's instilled. I also wonder though, too, if it isn't like, I've certainly come to peace with like any sort of like, but I feel like there's probably some element of proving to it earlier, at least. I think I definitely came to peace with my own self, but I think probably like, at a certain point, it was like proving. Yeah.
Yeah. In my 20s, I looked at a job and work as, if I can just get to this level. And then in my 30s, if I can just get to this level. And then in my 40s, if I can just get to this level. And now I turn 50. And now I look at, if I can just work hard enough so that one day I can relax.
It's really interesting.
But it's scarier as you get older, because now I can't quite see that finish line yet, and I don't know that I'd want to stop, because I to put it all into context, when I say, you know, and you guys say that I work a lot and we talk about work ethic, not that it's measured in hours, but I have never known what a 40-hour work week is.
Yeah.
Don't think I've ever known what a 50-hour work week is. And I may not have ever worked a 60-hour work week. Yeah. I hover in that 70 to 80 hours a week. But I still manage to enjoy life and do things I want to do. I've sacrificed Saturdays, because Saturday in the car business is just one of those days you don't leave, and evenings and holidays and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the payoff has been there, in monetary things and being able to do certain things that, I can look back and that's kind of my box that I built, and I can look back at it and go, hey, I'm proud of that. This is what I did. I kind of got off the subject, of where we're going here, but, the work value has to have satisfaction on the other end. If there isn't satisfaction, then you're just working a lot.
You're toiling for the sake of toiling. Yeah, I mean, motivations come into play a lot, I think, when it comes to work values and the desire to work. Whether it's providing for something greater than yourself, like a family, mm-hmm. or if it's providing for yourself, for your future, these are sort of delayed gratification motivations in a way. And that's a pretty powerful means of creating work ethic in a person, I think.
I feel like, I'm just speculating here, but I feel like, so you're sort of born of necessity initially, and then you're born of necessity sort of by way of a family, I mean, to a degree, and also, well, yeah, by way of limited opportunities. I mean, I think that, you know, all things are expensive, but let's be real. There are limited opportunities coming out of, especially, you know, okay, you came out of central Minnesota, you come out of like small town, like there are just like more steps to sort of scale that up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like where I have, like opportunity wise, where I came out of, especially with like the fucking internet and like all things that, you know, came about in our generation, what I see as like necessity is more of like self-satisfaction and less like, that doesn't take away from the satisfaction of any other discipline, but I think my sort of manic approach to finding that has been just like born of knowing that like there, like that opportunity is there. Like that almost like stressed me out, because it's like more, it's almost like, I don't want to say dishonorable, because that's not really my vibe there, but it's just like, it's more wasteful and tragic to just have that opportunity and to not, you know?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think part of what you're dealing with as guys your age in your demographic, things are different now. You know, the pressures are different. And going back to choices, I was married at 22 years old, and and Grant, when your
sister, I'm 24 right now, yeah.
Yeah, just and Grant, when your sister was born, at that point, we, meaning your mother and I, made a decision that it was better for her to be at home,
yeah,
and not go off to work every day and send the kids to daycare. So we made that conscious decision, mm-hmm, and that's pressure.
Yeah, for sure, man. I can't.
So, so that's when I really dialed in and just told myself, you are now the provider.
You do your job and you do your job.
Exactly. And
totally. So and that's pressure. I fault you for that. No
that's,
doubt.
That's a little extra weight on the shoulders every day. And so that was kind of my excuse, though, also,
sure,
that my justification for working as much as I did, it was real easy to just say, well, I have two kids at home and my wife doesn't work outside of the home, so this is what I need to do, which was true, but it also was my crutch for, you know, the work ethic, work value, whatever it is, may also be a little bit obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, I mean, we're dancing around. You're definitely OCD. I mean, and I shared some of that.
It's nailed on the head in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly,
you have to have an almost fanatical devotion to.
And like word of the wise, if like don't leave shit lying around. if my dad is your dad, like maybe put that tool back.
yeah.
Okay, Vinny, you've been guiding us along here. I'm curious though, because okay, from my perspective, if I may,
sure. Yeah.
You are someone who really, honestly, I feel like you have a nice balance. I feel like you have a nice balance in terms of work, life, and ultimately where all those things hopefully lead, happiness. I just generally, I don't know. I mean, you know, like
I think so. I think
good. I'm glad you agree.
I mean, I would go so far as to say I think work ethic is one of my weakest qualities. Now, and I don't say this to be reassured by you guys that it's not true or whatever, because I do, you know, strive to excel in my career and have projects going on that I think are interesting. That takes a degree of work, but I couldn't do what you do, Grant, and I don't think I could do what you do, Scott. And it's not for the lack of it being instilled in me. My parents actually both grew up on dairy farms, and they have both worked at the same factory for their entire lives, and they put in very long hours raising us. They both worked through our entire childhood, and they two of the hardest working people I've ever met in my entire life. But I don't really have that same drive, and I don't feel unfulfilled by not doing it.
That's the thing, though, right? I mean, that's so important. Like, I don't know. There's a difference, though. Like, I don't know. There's satisfaction, and then there's like laziness, and those are very, very fundamentally different things to me. And I feel like there's also, it's not like overdoing it, but there's also like, there's like, this is good, like you're okay. But I think the difference then, that the difference between, let's just call it somewhat abstractly good and like hardcore work ethic, I feel like that difference needs to be sort of accepted by the hardcore worker as like, this is a pleasure. Like, this needs to be a pleasure. Otherwise, like, I can't project this as a guilt. You know, I can't project this as, this chunk of work where I know we're speaking abstractly and I'm doing lots of hand symbols that are, that are translating very well on the podcast. But that symbol, that chunk of work is not fat. Like, that's not laziness. That's sort of like wringing the towel.
That won't get accepted by the hard work people, though.
Sure, yeah.
Unfortunately, I just know this from true life. Over the years, there's been people in whatever positions that work their schedule and take off, and a few people will say, well, better for them that, you know, they don't devote their life to work, and everyone around agrees. And I turn around and think to myself, you lazy son of a bitch.
Yeah, I feel like me in this fictional conversation that's becoming less and less fictional, I'm that lazy son of a bitch. And I'm okay with it. I have had to come to terms with that myself. Is there more I could do for my career? Is there more I could do for the projects I'm a part of? Could I take on more?
Sure, but what is your motive? I mean, ultimately, again, what is your self-awareness? What is your motivation?
But I don't want to.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
But maybe I'm just jealous.
Well, I don't think either of those things have to be true. I don't think I necessarily have to be a son of a bitch, but you don't actually.
From your perspective, he is. Yeah, yeah. I think it's just like, it's. Even if we just pretended, okay, let's not talk about work. Let's just say like things we're very, very interested in. Let's say Vince is super into comics. You're really into hunting and I'm really into movies.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. So like if any of us like spends any time, if we're all hardcore, I'm a hardcore cinephile, you're a hardcore hunter and he's a hardcore comic head.
Sure.
Comic. Are you? No. Like, any time spent outside of that from the hardcore perspective is like wasted, quote unquote. And so I feel like it's the same, at least the way I see it is like work is perhaps higher on most scales because of the income or because of the, like, I feel like I also see work as like a body of work, as like, I'm very, very interested in people who have had long careers. And I've like tracked back through their careers and I look at what they made, and like that's really interesting to me. So the body of work, but ultimately, like, it's not. So it's kind of not about the amount of time necessarily. It's more about like the output, I guess, from my perspective. But even in this equation, it's like from any extremist standpoint, the person who isn't fully devoted is, you know,
right.
I mean, yeah,
we're each going to think the other person has gone too far or not far enough.
Yeah, exactly.
There's going to be some level of dissonance always, but
and you can't. You almost have to keep that because it's okay. In some ways, like, work is your religion in that way. So it's like, right. Vince is a heretic. You know, no. Yeah, you're not genuinely a heretic. No, but in this equation, this idea of
that was just a good, a nice way of putting it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we don't have to get to religion, but it is also like a different time on that scale. And I feel like there are a lot of like parallels between sort of devotion. Alas.
Yeah, being devoted to your work is something, the great dichotomy in it and the great like personal dissonance for me is that so many of my friends are hyper motivated, hyper work ethic.
So, okay, hold on. This is something I did want to say about you is like you pitch yourself as that, or well, not pitch yourself, but you're saying like, oh yeah, I don't, you know, I take my time. But I think you also put yourself in many situations where you have to show up all the time. You know, I think that's the scariest thing about what you do to me is that you're required to show up at all times. Like, and I don't want to speculate too hard, but I think you could maybe argue, oh, there's solace in that. Like, oh yes, I show up and this is that. And I know we heard that from Karen Davies, right? The fucking Olympic
the Olympic rower
who's also went to Harvard, medalist. Who also Columbia Law, and then now Oxford MBA. Psycho.
Yes.
Similar levels of psychosis, I'm sure. But but the reality is, too, that like putting yourself in a position to show up and putting yourself on the hook is hard work because it's scary and it's like, you know, and so like even just you doing this podcast alone is enough to say, oh, okay, of course we have cultivated like a dope show and it's like fun and it's whatever, but you do two, like you do two podcasts outside of work.
Right.
Like,
so in a way it's all relative, but I guess it's a matter of self-perception because I don't perceive myself as working particularly hard on any given day, but
sure. But you're also doing things you're really interested in.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, that is, I think, maybe something I would apply to my own life as well. And I think it's maybe why I like work hard, I say, but it's just like, I'm just trying really hard because I care. But really, ultimately, like, it is a do what you love situation where I am super obsessed with all the stuff I'm doing.
You're a great example of that. I would love to reflect that question to Scott and ask, if you want to just pontificate on that classic phrase that says, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And it's saccharine and oversaid, and I don't think it's definitely not a perfect phrase by any means.
Saccharine, like sugary?
Yeah. Nice. And it's kind of over.
Over sugar.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
There's some granules sort of floating around in the drink.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a passion for your work, or is working hard your passion, or is it completely two separate things?
I'm not sure. I think they kind of overlap each other. I obviously love what I do, and I have that sense of accomplishment, and it's really all I know now for the last couple of decades, and I think I'm good at it, and that's my achievement. And I'm not sure what, if it's one because of the other. I do love it, but I do still view it as work. I'm tired at the end of the day. It's work. Plain and simple, it's work, you know, and I'm not sure who said it. I'm a quote guy too. I kind of live by some of these things I've heard over the years of Vince Lombardi and some of these other things.
Do you have any like offhand you could regale us with?
Julius Erving.
Yeah, please.
Actually, he said a professional is a person that does the things they love to do on the days you don't feel like doing them.
Right.
And there are those days, and I think I thrive off of being needed a little bit also, because I know things don't get done quite. This is going back to the obsessive compulsive thing, but yeah. Things don't get done exactly how I like them done if I'm
certainly
not there.
Certainly something I was reminded of in my youth. No, I'm just
I
kidding.
I have no
I'm
idea
I'm
what
kidding.
You're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I was so lax with you.
No, I mean, yeah, I'm also a little fucker. Like, so I can't imagine, you know. Like,
yeah, you were a slight handful.
Yeah. It's kind of a funny juxtaposition, or perhaps it's created out of that. I don't know. But okay, so something I am curious about, I'm sure we'll OTT here soon, Vinny. But, I feel like, okay, maybe it is that sort of OCD vibe. I don't. It's not like a bad thing, I feel like, inherently. I'm actually very thankful for whatever that is.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like, I don't know.
Perfectionism in a way.
Certainly. It just like drives you. It's just energy, I feel like. But you also like do a lot of other stuff outside of work that is like, it's hobbies, but like also like at a high level. I will say, like, I feel like even just having your motorcycle and like working on that consistently over the years, it's just like constant like building of stuff. And then, I mean, the music, like, you're a really great musician, like, fantastic guitar player, singer.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, but I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know the question
Do you feel like this work ethic, this burning drive translates to the things you do recreationally?
Yeah, it's part competitiveness, I think. If I can't be at least competitive and pretty good at it, I'm probably not interested in it.
Sure.
And going back to the creative mind, I think in another life, I could have probably been an inventor or an engineer.
Engineer, for sure, yeah.
Because I can dissect things in my mind.
Yeah, you've made a bunch of interesting,
kind of weird.
I like these weird diagrams you've drawn. Like, I remember, like, anytime I'm like, oh, I need this thing or yeah, it's like you're like, oh yeah, you're just a problem solver. I mean, really.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of the modern day MacGyver.
For real.
Anybody can remember MacGyver.
You've got some good honey-do lists that you've knocked out of the park, for real.
Yeah, and the same with music. I have a passion for music. I love almost every type of music out there.
Do you like my EDM?
With exception to a few.
Oh, wow.
No. But the same with that, because I play publicly, it's all in, some of it's maybe vanity, sure. But I want people to listen to me and watch me play and go, hey, that's...
I mean, here's what I would argue, man. I like, whatever, that it's sort of semantics at a certain point, but I feel like it's just artistry. I really do. Like, even within the car sales, all that stuff, it really is sort of like living as art form.
The desire to perfect a craft or a skill is artistry.
Especially for the benefit of others, regardless of vanity. I feel like to a certain degree that has got to be artistry, you know? It mm-hmm. really is. So I feel like I've appreciated that and like sort of can chalk that back. But if we're going to chalk back, if we're going to take a step back onto that sweet, sweet soil of the old Spanier farm. Spanier Actually, I remember,
farms.
Yeah, we had a fantastic, you had the like auction notice and like a great, I wonder how you guys got that. It must have been from a crop duster, a photo of the farm.
Yeah, it was an aerial
yeah.
photo, right?
Nice, yeah.
Back in the day, they had a company that would just fly by and they would sell these pictures door to door.
Nice. They would come up with the pictures
with
the
and picture
be like,
made, absolutely. Yeah. Same Holy thing happened with my mother's family's farm.
Amazing. Absolutely. I love it. Good work, guys. Yeah. Anyway, those were hanging in our basement when I grew up. The dairy farm. The farming is a really interesting sort of thing. We're talking about dairy.
Dairy
okay,
farms
so every week, Vince, can I? Every Please. Week we sort of explore a topic that isn't necessarily germane to the topic.
You have the soundbite down flat.
Germane. Yeah, and it's a bit off topic, one might say. And this week's off topic topic is dairy.
Dairy in all of its glory. Be it a food group or a queen or a farming business. Are you a dairy fan after growing up on a dairy farm?
Unfortunately, no. I'm probably intolerant by now.
Lactose intolerant? Well, I am too a bit, but that doesn't stop me eating as much dairy as I can get my hands on. Your family, how many generations do you go back farming-wise?
That's a good question. I've never asked.
It would be my great-great-grandfather. But you have to remember, my father was born in 1922. So his growing up was quite a bit different than any of ours.
A little bit. Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Second World War. You got the Prohibition. great, great
a lot of things
crash,
happened during that time.
Twenties, and thirties.
How many head of cow did you guys have?
Good question. We milked between 40 and 50 cows, pretty
That's
consistently.
Pretty solid size, yeah. Especially with only having, at one point, it was just you and your father doing the milking.
Yeah, yeah, and towards the end of that, it was primarily just me. So I would get up. During the school year at roughly 3:30, 4 a.m.
Oh, good Lord, no.
Get all of that
Certainly when
stuff
I would be
done.
Going to bed around my school year.
Yeah, and knock all that out.
And you'd milk again when you got home, right?
Yeah, so after school, you had to do all those other chores and milk the cows, and you'd get back in the house at 8 in the evening and get your homework knocked out, and luckily high school was relatively a glide for me. I didn't necessarily take advantage of everything and excel in things that I maybe could have, but it was fairly easy for me to get through. And
well, when you work at a full-time job on a farm besides,
I was like picturing him with like two sort of extendable arms that he had manufactured, just like trying, like going like this and like milking like several cows like at once. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you. Sort of Doc Brown-esque.
Yeah, I mean, 50 head is a lot for one person to get through. That's yeah. pretty. That's a good big number. Big number.
Certainly. I worked on that farm with Charlie for like a few days that one time. My old friend Charlie.
Oh, wait,
and,
really?
Yeah, worked on a dairy farm. I don't know how many days. I think it was like nigh upon a week, maybe yeah, less.
A week,
and just covered in shit at the end of the day, and just like, wow.
Yeah, you get coated in it.
Yeah, no, I certainly like had. I feel like that was a good sort of reference point for me looking back. I think that was yeah. But I'm just gonna answer about dairy, Vin. I don't know. I don't really drink any milk anymore.
You're not a milk drinker? You're an ice cream eater, though.
Gelato.
I guess, yeah, that's right.
Could feel so my dad cringing.
It's a whole pasteurization thing, because I grew up without pasteurization and
oh, yeah. Drink milk. That was your thing, right? Okay, I remember this, because you're like, you wouldn't drink milk, or you would only drink 2%? What was it? Because we would have milk with
milk.
Yeah, we would have milk with most of our meals, right?
Right.
Like, we would, but I feel like you wouldn't.
I couldn't, I could never, I just can't drink pasteurized milk.
Yeah.
That's so strange.
Isn't that crazy?
I was once given unpasteurized milk as a kid. I was the most violently ill, I was a mess. And my mom at the time, first time mother, she's a wonderful mother, but she wasn't really, you know, a pro at it. And she thought, they gave it to me when I was a kid. What's the worst that can happen? Turns out I'm a little bit lactose intolerant. And when you have unpasteurized milk, when you're 6 years old and a little bit lactose intolerant, it gets messy.
Oof. Buddy. Yeah. Okay. So do you have a milk habit? Do you have a dairy? I mean, dairy habit, certainly.
Yeah. I love cheese. Cheese is sensational. And I do even get like indigestion when I eat a lot of it, but it doesn't stop me.
Yeah. I just respect. Love. You just power through, man. I respect that. So
life's too short to not eat cheese.
A little bit of cheese. Certainly. But milk, you drink milk?
Milk is like inconvenient to buy as a bachelor.
It is.
It goes bad.
It's the worst.
Frequently. I feel like when I'm in a relationship, my milk consumption goes up a little bit.
Nice. Respect. Yeah. I guess
you can get through a half gallon.
Totally. But even then, like I feel like just because of my habits I had formed, I like wouldn't be drinking milk. I have milk in my fridge right now, but only because I was doing a shoot with a girl with some like a big bowl of Fruit Loops and some milk. Literally.
So it's prop milk. Basically. Yeah,
prop milk. Certainly. But I did have a bowl of cereal. So the first in probably like a year, 2 years or something.
Cereal is an unwitting casualty for not owning
I know,
milk.
Poor bastard.
Yeah. Well, closing dairy thoughts. What do you like cheese? Do you like other dairy products?
I love cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like ice cream. And
yeah.
I just, from when I was little, you know, when we went to school, they only served pasteurized milk.
Sure.
And they wanted me to drink it all the time, and I ended up giving it away every day because I just
you had the good stuff.
Couldn't
you were it. Trading? Were you trading for some snack packs?
Yeah, maybe Jell-O pudding.
Hustler,
right?
Well, classic.
Yeah, dairy farming is tough work. Both my parents grew up on farms that dairied and. There's a lot that goes into
it. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I wouldn't have wanted to.
Please, please interrupt.
Because it taught me things that have helped me over the years, all through my life. And there were sacrifices. You know, I couldn't play as much the sports in high school and things like that. And I couldn't leave for a weekend on a camping trip with my buddies. That just couldn't happen. But the payoff was the time spent in the country and working with your hands and growing up that way, I think, is something so many people are never going to know.
That's a good point.
I mean, this is actually very insightful. This is the truth I feel like that I have seen in different ways, and that we sort of dance around when we talk about hard work, is like there is a nectar there. Like there really is. But for most people to get to the nectar takes a lot of stuff. And I feel like the nectar is different to most, it's to everyone. I mean, to me, I find really, really great joy. I feel like now it's more twofold these days. Before, I feel like it was more one-fold in that I was like really obsessed with the final product. And then, like, I feel like I became obsessed with kind of the grind of it. And then now I think I kind of have a balance of, like, the experience of it is so important to me. Especially, I think, as I've shot more photos and, like, video stuff. Like, the experience, the way that happens is really important. But the final product is still kind of king.
But the experience matters a lot. I think you mentioned it, maybe it was the last time we recorded or the time before, that in the future you will be nostalgic about the time that you're living right now.
Yeah.
You'll look back and say, like, Wow, those were the years we were on the grind. We were making stuff happen.
Yes, this is what I... Yes, I've said this before. I was like, for some reason, I keep coming back to this moment, but it was when I was in Los Angeles, and I was talking to she was a woman at this production company, and she's produced all these movies, and I'm sitting there showing her some work and like talking about a few of our projects, like the Tokyo one. And I'm like, oh yeah, we're running around the city, and there's like, we don't have any permits. It's just me and Braden. And she's just like, oh, how I miss those days. You know, I'm just like, oh fuck.
People miss the days that you're living.
Oh fuck. Oh fuck. And I'm like, I really want to be, I really want to like level up. I want to do the big productions or whatever. But then you're like, oh wait. So I actually feel really lucky in that I realized like literally living the dream.
You were given the gift of awareness in a way.
Yeah, for sure. But I feel like I've been pretty aware of like, I feel like in some ways that has taken me, almost not even changed my work ethic per se, but has like helped me enjoy more what is going on. Although I do feel like what it has done is like also slice some of the fat of my work, which is like, sometimes I feel like you get caught up in the grind and like you're taking nectar, the joy from the grind, and you're actually just like grinding
to grind.
Yeah. You're just like, you've already ground the, whatever you're trying to grind there, and it's just dust. It doesn't matter. So it's like, move on. But that's hard to do when you're in that mode. So I feel like that gave me perspective on that moment as sort of abstract or...
I think it's a important thing to realize about working hard is that if there's not at least some gratification through the process, then it's unsustainable. And unsustainable is... the time left in this episode.
Oh,
so
respect. Wow.
We should impart two questions upon the guest that's been so gracious, not only to join us, but to invite us into his home.
Yeah. And share some of his delicious drink with us.
I hope I can get my hands on.
Yeah, certainly.
The episode.
To be fair, I did actually have a little bit of the Jack Daniels single barrel, not the Templeton. As I will say, it... Now looking back on it, it was an outright lie when you said, is that Templeton? And I said, yes.
Well, the funny thing is I already knew that because I knew exactly how much was left in that Templeton.
Wow.
Respect. You did kind of take a really close gander at it, and I went,
and there's a wry smile involved, I think.
I feel like...
And it's a different color.
It is a different color. I also like... I tend to leave fingerprints on stuff. Not even just the physical kind. I feel like you can look at a situation.
Yeah,
it's like, Grant was here, wasn't he? I really... I mean, also, you fucking obsessive compulsive. And anything astray, you would have caught upon. Yeah. I really couldn't get a lot past you. Okay, going on. A couple of questions.
I'm going to do the honors. Please. Of asking the questions.
I'm so excited to see what you ask.
Firstly, I'll break them up this time. Firstly, how can our listeners support you, Scott Spanier?
Buy a car.
You heard it here, guys.
Come on down to St. Cloud Subaru.
Ultimately, you know, as I've gone through the 28 years in this business, and people, I've been a partner in owning a store. I've been a general manager. I've been sales managers. I've done pretty much every facet in the business. But when someone asks me what I do, I'm a car salesman and I'm proud of it. I wasn't always that way. Because we all know the stereotypes and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, I'm a car salesman and I'm good at it and I like it. So, Subaru, I've been lucky. Subaru is just taken off. I was lucky enough to go to Indianapolis to their plant where the Outbacks and Legacies are built. And now it's at the beginning of the year, the new Impreza is going to be built there. And Subaru, their philosophy, you've all seen their ads on television. They don't ever talk about price. They're selling the story of the car and where they came from, and one of the most awarded car companies in the world. And they're still small by compared to some of the other Japanese manufacturers in terms of volume and numbers, but they've grown exponentially over the last 10 years and have just taken off like crazy. They don't have recalls. They don't, there's such a conscious company, and it's rare in the car business. But to get back to your question, buy a car.
Yeah, there you go. Great. Respect.
Well, my own mini plug for Subaru. I'm not a driver. I can't really drive. But a close friend of mine, former roommate, Corey Simpson, nice. Works on the Subaru account.
At Carmichael Lynch.
And fantastic. He said there's no better company to work with. There's no client better to work for.
Oh, that's so awesome.
They do things the right way.
Hell yeah.
They're good people.
Hell yeah. So it's cool that they have their account here. I mean, that is like a big thing. I mean,
oh, it's a huge feather in the cap of the city.
Yeah, it really truly is.
Here in Minneapolis.
I think it's cool too.
Reciprocal though, because they've done a fantastic job with the branding and the image.
Yeah. So it's beautiful.
We're all fans of Carmichael.
We're all certainly fans.
Great answer to that question. We've got one more for you. If you'd want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you want that to be?
Wow. I think you have to have goals, but you have to have the sense of accomplishment. So whatever you're doing, if you concentrate on it and work hard enough, it doesn't matter what the circumstance is, who's on top of you, who's in front of you. If you really want to get there, you can do it. You have to be a sponge, and you have to learn to pick the people that you know are going to help you pull you up that mountain. You hear all these people say, if you want to be successful, just surround yourself with successful people. I believe in that to a certain degree, but I think you have to be that successful person that other people want you to surround you, you know? And so you can overcome anything, in hard work. When it boils down to it, hard work is still king.
Respect.
Well said.
I find that I chuckled there because I was answering an interview for this like photo blog thing recently, and there was something about like advice to up and comers, which was ironic to me because I'm very much an up and comer within that. But I said, I was just like kind of stream of consciousness, like sort of points. And one of them was like, surround yourself with dope people. But then I was like, additionally, you should be a dope person. And right. I mean, different words, but a similar idea.
The same sentiment.
Yeah. Can I just bounce a couple things off you, Vince?
Of course.
I feel like something that you have been talking about and you have instilled is very much, it's about pride. It really is like, at the end of the day, taking pride in what you do, whatever that is. And maybe that's this OCD energy, maybe that's whatever, but it is just sort of an attentiveness to the quality across the board, whatever you're doing, just take pride in it. And it's sort of like within that, it's like having intention and owning it, which is super important. And then two other things within that. One is like take advantage. I think like we have pretty fucking awesome advantages in front of us as a generation and whatever. But I think that's something you definitely, like I look at your story, I look at your life and I see what you have gifted. And I feel like the most important thing there, you know, the best gift back is to take advantage. And then finally, I think one of the more amazing things, I feel like there are not a lot of people who could have, you were talking about the stigma of car salesmen, right? There are not a lot of people who have a dad that is a car salesman, a very successful car salesman that isn't a dick, you know? And like, and not only that, but like a really genuinely good person, like, I feel like that's one thing that has really stuck with me is just sort of the reputation you have, and there's a reason for it. And I feel like the thing is have pride, but be good, you know, just be good. And that begets so much. And it's like, ultimately, even just for you, that's going to be much more fulfilling, I hope, at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how I've tried to live my entire business life. when I put my head on the pillow at night, I sleep well. You know, business isn't as tough as a lot of people make it. It's dealing with people on a logical level, and it's pretty easy once you get to that point and realize that you can do all that. Just on a side note, in talking with that and the reputation, and I got an email Monday morning of this week that I printed out and brought around to all of my sales staff to show them what reputation means. And it was a simple email, and this person tracked me down through our website or through the radio commercials or people they knew or whatever. They found me, and the email said, "Scott, 13 years ago, you sold me a 97 Ford Explorer. It finally died. When can I come and see you?"
Wow. Respect.
13 years with very limited to no communication with this customer, and they tracked me down because of their level of trust.
Yeah, they know. I mean, and here's the, you're, even if that car, let's say, okay, we're talking about mechanical issues, but even if that car died 2 years in, it's like, I feel like you're the type of person that would deal with it, that would, or whatever that is. I just, yeah, there is trust there. And that's just like so important.
And work speaks louder than words. And that's, I think, that's why you can go 13 years without any communication and still have a strong level of trust, because the work speaks volumes.
Right.
Hell yeah. Well,
thank you again so much.
What a pleasure.
For joining us. It was insightful, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. Good time. Can you leave us maybe, good sir? Pop. Sorry. With a ship it. We sign off with ship it every week, and we're wondering if we could just have a good old span your family ship it.
All right. Vince, Grant, it's been a pleasure, and ship it.